back at it with you Wednesday, November 25th on Connecticut Today, the day before Thanksgiving 2020. Dr. Dean Finelli joined us in hour number two in the 3:30 segment. He is a lawyer who also has backgrounds in biology and organic chemistry. We talked all things legal and medically regarding the upcoming COVID-19 vaccines. Speaking of the COVID pandemic, we listen to what Governor Ned Lamont had to say earlier in the day after that. And in the 5 o'clock hour, our buddy Tim Phelan returned from the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim outlining some of the challenges that the state's retailers are facing this year heading into Black Friday. Joining us now is a gentleman who is a lawyer. He's got a law degree from George Washington University. He's also a PhD in organic chemistry from Temple University, and he has a BS in chemistry from Villanova University, so he knows from whence he speaks. Dr. Dean Finelli is on the line. Dr. Finelli, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Doing well. Good to join you.
What's your overall look at what we've seen from this Operation Warp Speed, Dr. Finelli? Drawing on the background you have, what are your thoughts on this?
So overall, I think Operation Warp Speed has been an extraordinary success. I mean, when you think about drug development, you're typically talking the term of decades. Through Operation Warp Speed and the taxpayer funds that have been afforded to these biotech companies that are developing these candidates, you know, fast forward 11 months since the virus has been announced, and, you know, we have four candidates potentially, with one potentially coming on the market in the next couple of weeks. So that's, in my opinion, a great success.
Does that, though, kind of feed into some of the stuff you're seeing, Dr. Finelli, of, oh, no, this can't be good. They did it too quickly. You know, the layman or the laywoman really doesn't, know about the new technologies that make this possible, do they?
That's exactly right. And I would have liked to have seen, you know, already some type of public marketing campaign just educating the people, because I think you're exactly right. A lot of people, you know, they're just hearing, oh, we're going to have a vaccine in a year, and their minds are just, you know, very skeptical. Is this rushed? But I'll tell you, when I look at the data, and, you know, this is not, it's become very politicized, but it's not a situation where the company alone makes the decision or the FDA makes the decision. The company, the FDA, there's outside advisory boards. The data and the information from these clinical trials, each phase as they become available, are published in peer-reviewed journals. So there's a lot of information out there. So when I look at the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines and all the information out there, at least in my opinion, they look extremely effective and they look extremely safe, despite the fact that we've expedited this.
Yeah, and I mentioned on this show, Dr. Finelli, many times, my ex-wife, my son's mom, she has worked in and still works for major drug companies, and I met a lot of those people over the years. They're not going to put their scientific backgrounds and their reputations and what they do for a living on the line for any political reasons. I mean, that just doesn't happen with drug companies.
Absolutely not, and especially in the specific circumstances, you know, the first anything that comes out is being looked at under a microscope, and, you know, anything that went wrong, you know, would just be a publicity disaster, aside from the whole, you know, injury to people. So, yeah, I agree with you. I do not foresee any situation where any of the data was not completely accurate, and these people that are working at these companies are some of the scientists, smartest scientists in the world with the highest ethical standards. So I'm pretty confident that the data that's coming out is very accurate.
Okay, so let's segue from your medical background, your biological background, to your law background, and your product background. So what happens here, Dr. Finelli? Do you think that, you know, the Pfizer one comes out first? What about the Oxford vaccine, the Moderna vaccine? Is this going to be a scenario where in 6 or 8 months, you know, there are 3 or 4 different vaccines? From your experience, how does that work?
Yeah, we're going to need multiple vaccines to get through this in a timely fashion. So, you know, Pfizer alone, Moderna, even the two of those candidates, we're not going to be able to get this done in a timely fashion unless we have multiple candidates. So the more we have, the better. When I think of, you know, the most recent news from AstraZeneca, you know, that gives me a little pause. You know, when I look at Pfizer, look at Moderna, I didn't have any hesitation when I saw the data. But now when you talk about AstraZeneca, You know, first they're saying of the clinical trials, they had about 62% efficacy. And then apparently some small cohort within the trial received half a dose by mistake. And then it could be 90%. I think they really need to go back and clean that up and figure out exactly what's going on there. Because, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't work or it's not effective, but, you know, there's a lot of skepticism and people don't want to say here at this point, oh, we mistakenly gave people half a dose and now, you know, just leads to more skepticism. So that's one that they really need to clean up.
Dr. Dean Fennelly is the guest, PhD. He's got a background in law, in organic chemistry, in chemistry. Dr. Dean, hang on. Quick break. We'll be right back with you. More with Dr. Dean Fennelly, PhD. Traffic and weather together on WICC. And we're getting a really unique perspective here on Operation Warp Speed. Dr. Dean Fennelly is the guest, Dean Fennelly, PhD. He has a law degree from George Washington University. He's got a chemistry background from Villanova, and he's got a PhD in organic chemistry from Temple University. Organic chemistry, that was big with me in high school, Dr. Dean. Now, all my friends who laughed at me because I couldn't get calculus, right? I did the touchdown dance with them on organic chem because they couldn't understand it for anything. So I tell you, you want to talk orbitals, double bonding, single bonding, I'm right there with you on this. You have a unique background, obviously, with the chemistry side of this and the law side of this. What are these firms looking at now, Dr. Fennelly, from a legal point of view? Because you and I both know, and we see it in the news a lot, more than people want to see, of what a bad drug, a bad vaccine can do to a company monetarily, liability-wise, confidence-wise with shareholders. So as the people in the trenches at these companies are getting the raw data down, what are the legal departments in these companies doing right now?
Well, certainly they want to make sure it's safe, but I think it's important that everyone know that we're in a pandemic situation. And in a pandemic situation, there's a law called the PREP Act, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. And what that does is, in a pandemic situation, companies that are creating, and the legal term is countermeasures, that would include therapeutics, diagnostics, or, of course, vaccines, they would have immunity from liability unless that the cause of the injury was because of willful negligence or just such an egregious conduct that it rose, you know, to a serious level. So most of these companies won't face liability if someone's injured during the pandemic. But nonetheless, it's important that these legal departments inside are also analyzing this data. They want to make sure that, I mean, it would be a publicity nightmare to launch a vaccine in a pandemic situation and have something, you know, A, not work, but even worse, you know, injure people. So, you know, they're looking at the data, and it's all about, you know, making sure, I mean, safety is the most important thing, you know, followed, of course, by efficacy. So they're looking at that data, and, you know, they're going to make sure that all the appropriate warnings are out there, that legal departments are going to make sure that, you know, people that are getting this, whether they were in the trial part or they're at the actual public once a vaccine's approved or authorized, that they're aware of, you know, what's going to happen, just so it's more of a transparency thing.
You know, Dr. Fennelly, I'm familiar with this because of, again, my ex and other people I know, other relatives I know that have worked with drug companies. But explain to my audience a little bit what happens now with this data and what the FDA does, the review process there, and how they actually vote on what to authorize for a vaccine or a drug and what level of authorization they do. How does that work?
Right. So the U.S. FDA came out and said, and what Pfizer is going to apply for is what's called emergency use authorization. And that's not a full licensure. That's not a full approval. And the U.S. FDA said, you know, when you're doing this phase three trial, after you get to the halfway point, meaning if you have 30,000 people in your trial, after you vaccinate 30 or 15,000, half of that, we want to see 2 months worth of safety data before we'll approve under an emergency use authorization. Now, the emergency use is a lower standard. It's basically, do the benefits outweigh the risks? And, you know, obviously we're in a pandemic. We need this out there as soon as possible. But nonetheless, you know, this there are outside advisory boards that will look at all the data. And I believe they're meeting on December 10th, and they'll have the data in advance. And what they'll do is they'll look at all the safety data, look at all the efficacy data, make sure everything's there. They'll even look at the manufacturing. Is this being manufactured? Does the site that's manufacturing or sites that are manufacturing this comply with all the regulatory standards? And then only after they look at all that data will this external review board then make a recommendation whether to authorize. And, you know, I think it's pretty – unless there's something, you know, just extremely crazy in there, it's pretty likely that we're going to see an authorization in the next 2 weeks.
Now, what about foreign companies, foreign countries, rather, Dr. Finelli, because you and I both know that, you know, different countries have different aspects of drug safety. You know, there's stuff here in the U.S. that you can't get overseas and vice versa. Obviously, they need a vaccine. Are any of these companies, do you think, are going to face any hurdles overseas? Because let's face it, there aren't just Americans that need to be vaccinated. This needs to go around the world.
Absolutely right. And, you know, just so your listeners know, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in the world is the gold standard of regulatory approval. I mean, once the U.S. FDA and its independent advisory boards authorize or approve a drug, you know, that's at least that's not even my opinion. I think it's a fact that every other country, you know, will look at that data independently, of course, but, you know, the supplies will roll out based on, you know, it seems the U.S. is the furthest advanced of most of these, aside from, you know, the nonsense you hear out of Russia. But of all the real vaccine candidates that have actual data and are in phase three trials, these are, most of them are in the United States, and it looks like there's a lot of supply agreements between Pfizer, between AstraZeneca, with other countries as well. So, you know, when we hear the number that Pfizer can produce, you know, up to 1.2 billion doses a year, and AstraZeneca can produce potentially up to 3 billion, that's, you know, for the globe. That's not all going to the U.S. There's supply agreements all over the world with these companies.
So I'm getting the impression, finally, Doctor, that you're not a big believer in the Sputnik vaccine in Russia. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I think if it wasn't evident, yeah, that's I don't even know if we call that a vaccine yet. I don't know. It's basically just a test drug, and, you know, using their people as guinea pigs, unfortunately.
This has been fascinating. He has a law degree from the George Washington University Law School, PhD in organic chem from Temple, a chemistry degree from Villanova. He works at the law firm Seyfarth. Check it out, seyfarth.com. Great stuff from Dr. Dean Lewis Finelli. Dr. Finelli, we do appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful weekend, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Dean Lewis Finelli.
Good afternoon, everybody. A little off schedule today, given the day before Thanksgiving and leading up to Black Friday, the busiest retail day of the year. Just wanted to give you time to prepare and some of our thoughts about what happens over the next few weeks. First off,
this is a special report from News 8.
Good afternoon. I'm Lisa Carber.
No, that shouldn't have got on there. That's
here with,
interesting.
Josh and Paul and David Lehman, since we're going to be talking a little bit about what we're doing with retail going forward. First, let me give you a little bit the COVID daily summary. I say that with some trepidation. Do you have that up there, Max? Let me do the daily summary first.
And the governor waiting for a slide to be put into place here. The numbers, as we mentioned them to you earlier, are not good. Here they are.
What you see in these numbers is a couple of things. A lot of COVID cases, a lot of tests. We just got off with our unified command, which are all the department heads and those who are the front line dealing with COVID, what 1872 COVID cases means in terms of track and trace, what that means in terms of making sure they have the community supports necessary to quarantine. It's getting stretched, but we're still on top. Positivity rate, as Josh would say, less than 6%, 5.99. let's just say this, that the last few days have been in the fours. The average over the last week, sort of 5.5, 5.8. But you ought to know is the big picture, the trends going forward. I say that in particular when you look at hospitalizations and fatalities. 77 hospitalizations is probably the biggest increase by far that we've had since this second wave, since this surge. We've been averaging about 22 a day for the last week. Fatalities, again, we've 45 fatalities. That reflects the hospitalizations from a few weeks ago. We've been averaging, I think, about 15 a day. Let me just tell you, these numbers are important, but think broadly in terms of the trend lines of what they say. I mean, in Wall Street, they call it day traders. If you focus too much on day-to-day numbers and stocks, you know, politicians looking at day-to-day polls, COVID looking at the day-to-day numbers. I look at this in terms of trend lines, what I see over the last few weeks, what I see in the coming few weeks. And we know that the next few weeks are going to be complicated. And let me tell you a little bit what we're going to be doing about that. Next slide, Max. We spent a lot of time. Look, we knew November is a tough month. We knew it started with a lot of people voting. We knew it was flu season. We knew the universities sending the kids home, thousands of kids coming back. We talked a fair amount about restaurants over the last few weeks, doing everything we can to keep our restaurants going, keep them going safely. You can't order after 9:30, lights out at 10, what that means in terms of our municipalities being able to enforce that. We've had to, take away the liquor license in a couple of cases. But I think it gives you an idea of how hard as well our restaurants are doing everything they can to stay open safely. You've seen the plexiglass and some of the other ways that we keep below capacity and keep people distance. I say that as a lead up to many retailers are offering safe shopping as well. Black Friday is the day we've traditionally thought about as the kickoff to, holiday, Christmas, Hanukkah shopping. Often you've thought about, hey, let's be there at 6 a.m. in the morning, be the first one in line, get that $129 flat screen TV. Well, our retailers are doing everything we can in a place where we have a 5.5-6% COVID infection rate to operate safely, keep you safe, and make sure you have options. So when it comes to, quote, Black Friday, it's going to extend for a week. It's going to extend for a few weeks. No need to crash the line at 6 a.m. in the morning. You can reserve a time. There are a variety of options there as well. So you can get a time. Otherwise, they'll be socially distanced so that you can wait in line before you go into that that retail store. It's worth noting that a lot of the sales that used to get just in-store are also now available online. It's really worth noting that online shopping, you can shop local, and you can shop local on time. Support your local stores, support your local restaurants any way you can. I think it's ctvisit.com will give you a listing of a lot of our most interesting retail stores as well as restaurants. Place that you can order online. You can have easy pickup outside like we were before. So there's an inside option and an outside option as well. Housekeeping and security support and enforce guidelines. I really appreciate that, especially for the bigger stores, especially for the malls. It's so important that we trace this, make sure that in a very serious way, you keep the social distancing, you make sure people are wearing the mask, you make sure they're 6 feet apart, make sure that if you're getting crowded inside, you limit the number of entryways into your store or give people an opportunity to wait outside in a distance way. That's how we can operate our stores safely. I will tell you that the vast majority of our restaurants are operating safely and following the protocols, for which I'm very thankful. And you'll probably be able to tell the ones that aren't if you're going by, and probably you don't want to go in there anyway. You know, when it comes to retail, I'd say the vast majority are following these protocols as well. And for those that aren't, and we do get a notice, you give us a heads up, we get a call, or the local public health gets a call, or the fire marshal comes over, They usually give a friendly warning to those, you know, smaller operators that aren't paying attention. If there are people who are defiant and refuse to wear the mask, they can be subject to a $100 fine. And for those bigger operators who aren't operating safely, as of, you know, tomorrow at 12:01 a.m., you will be subject to a $10,000 fine. We're doing that not just to keep your patrons safe, those around you, but to make sure we can do everything we can to keep your stores open, you know, during this amazing shopping holiday season, and to do it safely. Next chart, Max. We just wanted to give a little thanks to folks who are doing amazing things in this time as we lead up to Thanksgiving. Those are, you know, teachers, those are nurses, those are food service workers, those are doing the testing. That's what we're trying to remind people of. As you probably know, we have Step Up Connecticut. That's going pretty well. 6,000 people have gone to the site so far. Hundreds are signing up. And now we have to allocate your skill set to the jobs that are out there. And we're working on that right now, doing everything we can to make sure we can amplify our capacity when it comes to testing, making sure we can back up teachers who have to quarantine when it comes to schools. And making sure more broadly volunteers are out there for our not-for-profits going forward and what that means for people.
Remarks earlier today from Governor Ned Lamont. We'll pick up with those after we do a little business, take care of traffic and weather together on the sixes on the button. 416 on Connecticut Today. At the 420, back to the phones in just a bit. A few more minutes of the comments today from Governor Ned Lamont. He gave them earlier today, so these are recorded. He is speaking while he's still isolating from COVID-19 at his home in Greenwich. Earlier today, the governor is saying we're just a hair under 6% positivity at 5.99%. Unfortunately, 77 more people hospitalized, another 45 people have been taken from us by COVID-19. The governor talking about, to start this segment, about how the state's contact tracing smartphone application is apparently doing what it's supposed to do.
I'm also really pleased in terms of a giving that our Connecticut Alert app is doing really well. We have close to 750,000 of you have signed up for it. I think that makes us far and away the most per capita in the country, for which is just amazing. As you know, you can get that on your Android device or your Apple device. Apple, you do it off of settings. Even I could do it. What's important to know is it's totally anonymous. So if you've been in contact with somebody tested positive, you'll be noticed. If you test positive, we will notice you. But you may have to input a code that allows us permission to notice others that you've been in contact with. Some people are a little hesitant to input that code. And again, remember, it's totally anonymous. They won't know it's you, but they will know that they've been in contact with somebody and they should quarantine and test to make sure they're safe as well. That's what this app is all about. This is what expands our capacity for track and trace in a period where we have now thousands of infections on a daily basis. And finally, and the chart, and then I'd really like to open it up, is you guys have been incredibly generous. It's not just Step Up Connecticut, but it's the thousands of donations to our food banks and Food Share and Salvation Army and United Way, getting food out to people, the thousands of turkeys that are available. I know you at your home, small social gatherings, smaller turkeys this time around, but also what you're doing to allow others in need during a time of great food distress be able to, you know, survive and enjoy a small gathering with their family as well. And that's what these food boxes are all about. And I was just on the call with our directors a few minutes ago, and Vanessa over at DCF just pointed out something that just really made me think. We're doing everything virtually these days. We're even doing virtual adoptions. And I think it was last week was Adoption Day. And 25 young Connecticut kids were adopted by parents who are going to take them in, doing that virtually. This is how everybody, this is why I give thanks for the state of Connecticut and the amazing people here. So with that, Max, David, Josh, Paul, we're ready to take any questions you may have.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
And they're in the Q&A portion here. Let's see if anybody was there. They go.
Happy Thanksgiving, Governor. I've had a chance to speak to some restaurant owners, and nobody wants to be fined. And as you know, they've taken a big hit. Some feel that businesses who are doing all of these things and spending money at a time when they just don't have it, there should be either rewarded or incentivized. And is it the right plan to start fining businesses at this time?
Well, here's the incentive, Sue. We have states where restaurants are closing and not allowed to open, you know, in different parts of the country right now. And that's not Connecticut. David Layman's working closely with the Restaurant Association almost on a daily basis, doing everything we can to keep them open safely. And as we said before, you're right. They've invested a lot of money in terms of, you know, plastic partitions, 6-foot spacing, 50% occupancy. But if there are a few outliers, they will be held accountable.
I also wanted to follow up on the unemployment numbers. More than a million people have filed for unemployment, and I know that benefits are expected to run out in mid-December, and the federal extended benefits are not coming to Connecticut because of the fact that the feds consider us to have a lower unemployment rate than we actually do. They believe it's around 6%, but it's really, according to Department of Labor, around 11%. Not getting those benefits will hurt a lot of people who still are out of work.
Well, let me start with that, and then maybe one of you guys can step in. But it's really important that the Fed step up and extend the unemployment so nothing runs out at the end of a three-month period or December 31st. Kurt Westby, let's say he's doing yeoman's work over DOL. They've been pretty busy at Department of Labor. We're now able to extend benefits to those who are earning as little as $100 a week. There's an awful lot of people that are left off of the numbers from the feds, and we're trying to do everything we can to power through. And I think we ought to hear something from the feds within the next couple of months, but I've been saying that for a couple of months.
All right, there you go. The more of the comments here, we'll break it off at that. Governor Ned Lamont earlier today with the latest COVID-19 update as we head into the Thanksgiving weekend. In his comments that we replayed in the 4 o'clock hour that he actually gave live at 1 today, was the state's retailers, the merchants out there trying to adapt to this whole thing heading into Black Friday. And joining us right now is a guy I've talked to over the years about this sort of stuff. But I don't think it's ever approached the situation that we're talking in now. Tim Phelan is head of the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association, representing many of the state's retailers. Tim, Paul here. How are you holding out? How you been?
I'm good, Paul. It's good to talk to you again.
And, boy, I tell you, I don't think we've ever, I can say definitely, because I think this is our first pandemic together, Tim. I don't think you folks at the CRMA or you or your staff or your members have ever faced anything like this.
Yeah, no, that's pretty safe to say that. My 25 years at the retailers, nothing has ever come close to this. It's a terrible time for a number of people in Connecticut. It's been a really rough time for the retail industry as well.
Now, in the comments the governor made today, I don't know whether you heard any of them, Tim, or not. You know, he didn't tell people, you know, not to go out and shop. He didn't say that. What he did highlight was, you know, obviously both the shoppers and the retailers, the stores taking precautions. And the governor saying, listen, you know, the shopping season will go on, but it kind of needs common sense, Tim, by both sides.
Yeah, I did listen to the governor's comments today, and he echoed a lot of what we've been trying to say leading up to Black Friday, which really is kind of like the unofficial kickoff of the holiday season, is that this year is going to look a little bit different than other years, only because consumers will have lots of different options to shop in their shopping for holiday gifts this year than they may have had in other years. And I think, you know, what the governor said, which what we've said, is that they should explore all those options including in-store shopping, online shopping, online pickup at a store, curbside pickup. Now, all those things are available to customers this year, to consumers this year, and we just think that everybody should, you know, consider all those options when they're going to do their shopping.
And Tim, he did mention in those comments, which I found interesting, and I guess maybe he has spoken to some of the retailers, or you folks, or the retailers have said that, you know, this is the year that, you know, they're not going to do, some of the big box stores maybe are not going to do those crazy, hey, 6 hours only, get a, you know, a flat screen TV for $100, and you have people, you know, crawling over each other like it's a fumble in an NFL game. I guess there's a push there not to do that, Tim. And I guess he said some of the retailers are going to spread their deals out over several days.
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, to be really candid about it, those sort of doorbuster sales have been started. The industry has started to move away from those over the last year or two for lots of different reasons. Probably it led to some of the, you know, trying to maybe open up Thanksgiving night was to avoid some of those, you know, so-called doorbusters. So that's been taking place a little bit more. It's been sort of leading up to that over the last couple of years. And then with respect to the rolling of a sort of a Black Friday sale, I think that's also, he was accurate about that. I think that you may see that throughout the season. We may not have all paid attention to it because we were thinking of other things, but they were probably got some notices from retailers that there were pre-Black Friday sales taking place. And sort of kind of trying to trying to send a message to consumers that, you know, this is going to be a different year than it's been in the past, and value will be there, and you don't have to wait to Black Friday for it to begin, and it probably will extend for a week or two into the holiday season.
And Tim, and even in the worst situations like this one, where obviously medically, you know, the whole medical community worldwide will learn just volumes and hundreds of volumes on what happened here and how to better deal with this, I would imagine the retailers that you deal with, but also across the country, Tim, from the huge stores down to the mom and pops, they may, you know, take some lessons from this maybe. And when things get back to what we used to refer to as normal, you know, 9 months ago, maybe they put some of those in play on a regular basis. What do you think?
Well, I think without a doubt, we've seen a transformation in the way retailers are communicating with their and delivering services to their customers. I think that will remain after when we do get back to normal. I think the industry was forced was forced to make changes and move rapidly to make those changes to meet customer demands, meet the customer where they were in a safe manner. And I think that forced them to, when they're examining how they're doing that, it led to some innovation, and that innovation will remain, I'm sure. Customers will demand a lot of it. Customers will continue to ask for the convenience of some of these innovations that retailers have come up with. So we're all looking forward to getting back to normal. I'm pretty confident we're going to be able to get back there soon. But I think you're going to see the industry continue to innovate to try to, you know, sort of meet customers where they are. And a lot of that innovation has come out of this period that we're in now.
Tim, you and I have heard, obviously, and talked to people deeply involved in the restaurant business and the bar business about how a lot of them are struggling and some of them closed, they're never coming back. Has there been a downside for some retailers? What's the impact been, Tim, as far as actually losing people who felt, you know, no matter with what help they got from the state or the feds, you know, they just couldn't hang on? Did you see an unfortunate number of that on the retail side?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, for the restaurant industry, this has been a really, really difficult, challenging time. We feel for our brethren in the restaurant world. It's really tough to operate a restaurant when you can't have customers come in, and a bar when you can't have customers come in. So we do feel for those folks. You know, our industry, the retail industry, is a little bit different in the sense that we are so diverse in the type of retailers that you have. So to your question, yes, some, depending on, I guess it depends is the answer. It depends on what kind of retail business you're in. Have you felt an intense burden or impact on you during this a period that we're in? So certainly across the board, all retailers have seen decline in sales and slow recovery since reopening. But certain sectors have done better than others, and those that haven't done as well, they are struggling to try to get through this, and hopefully when we do get back to normal, they'll get back up to speed and they'll be able to continue to operate.
All right, Tim, thank you. Best luck to you, your organization, and your members. Folks, check them out online at crmaonline.com, crmaonline.com, the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim Phelan, the head. Tim, good to talk to you. We'll talk down the line. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Check them out, folks. They are the trade organization, the lobbyist organization that represents retailers in the state.